And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to another episode here. Our first one of the spring. I've seen your tweets. I've seen your messages. I've seen your Gopher Illustrated posts asking me when, or even in person. I mean, Luke, at the open spring practice on Tuesday, I kid you not, I had six people come up to me and say, hey, when are you recording next? So I figured it was about time to sound the alarm here so Luke and I can get on the podcast waves here and talk a little bit of golf football. So Luke, how have things been for you the last couple of months?
I've been all right. I'm just proud of you. You're really changing your best, as I indicated on Twitter. You're getting up on a Saturday, accommodating to my schedule instead of your own. You know, you're serving and giving.
That's all we are about here.
I know. I just really appreciate it. I really appreciate that you're taking a new approach at life in general. It's going to be fun.
I mean, I'm usually a morning person anyway. But
I know.
I figured might as well get up a little bit earlier on a Saturday to make sure Luke can spend some time with his lovely wife. And
I was just impressed that you got up and it wasn't hunting related. That's the thing that I was impressed with.
I miss it already. I think I'm already counting the days until I can get back in the tree stand, and because I didn't get it done last year.
Yeah,
I didn't get the target buck I wanted. So, for those of you who are deer hunters, I would totally recommend getting out there here once it stops snowing. Number one, considering we got 3 inches down here in the cities today, but once it gets to be in that 50 to 60 degree range and there's still nothing growing on the trees, I mean, I'd get out there and get all your tree stand stuff done then. I mean, you can cut shooting lanes. You don't have to be out there moving tree stands when it's ungodly hot and you're sweating through everything you have. So, I mean, that's already what I'm looking forward to. Me and my hunting partner are already waiting for the days until it gets into the 50s and 60s, and you can start figuring out what we're going to do for 6 months from now. So
that's
just exciting, man.
That's
always
just,
exciting.
That's just an elite tip right there. Just elite.
Well, that and we got Lake of the Woods coming up first
right.
week of June. So if anybody's up in the Bidette area,
that's when we know that everyone is going to commit, right?
Every time.
Well,
we've talked about on this podcast, I got some vacations coming up here. I'm going to be going to Europe in May, which means that there's ultimately going to be 15 commitments during that 8 to 10 day span. I'm over there. It's always the way it happens. So it's coming up here quick. Plus, we have an elite quarterback on campus currently as we record this, and I'm sure we'll get into Max Duggan. I mean, actually, why don't we just start with that?
Yeah.
Max Duggan has been here now for almost 48 hours. Max Duggan, for those who don't know, he is the top quarterback in the Midwest in the 2019 class. He has offers from Ohio State, Georgia, TCU, Penn State, Iowa State, Nebraska. And many more. Those are just the ones off the top of my head. Minnesota's got him on campus here again. For those of you who don't have access to the crystal balls anymore, considering I believe that's a premium feature here in 24/7 Sports, it is trending very, very positively for Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota potentially here in the next week, in my eyes, could be grabbing the top quarterback in the Midwest. He'd be the top-rated quarterback to choose Minnesota since Moses Alapate. When he was an Under Armour All-American back at Bloomington Jefferson. Ultimately, that didn't end up well for Minnesota or Alapate by the end of it. But, again, you want to get this amount of talent on campus. And, number two, you're stealing away the number one recruit from the state of Iowa. And can you imagine the look on Hawkeye faces when they find out Max Duggan is going to Minnesota? So, again, I don't think this is a done deal. Now, my crystal ball has been in for Minnesota for a few weeks now. I think there's optimism that it could happen here in the next 7 days. But if it gets done, I mean, you're pairing together Max Duggan and Cole Kramer. And everybody knows I'm a big Cole Kramer guy from Eden Prairie from what I've seen of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's definitely a positive step in the direction. Plus, Minnesota's got 30 other names on campus today for their final junior day before it gets into more individual visits this spring. So stay tuned to Gopher Illustrated. Again, I was able to, you know, talk with a very good source close to the program last night about it, and I wrote down my thoughts on it on GI. So, again, if you want to actually be in tune to what's going on in recruiting, unlike elsewhere, come on over to GI because I think we're going to be running a special here in the next week or two. So if you've been looking around and seeing that your coverage that you're getting right now isn't holding up and you want to come over to where we have photos, video, practice reports from each practice, the most in-depth basketball knowledge, as Luke would know, with Ryan James. And then between Govey and I, I can absolutely 100% guarantee no one knows more about Gopher football and Gopher football recruiting than we do at Gopher Illustrated. So let's, with that, Luke, I think you want to talk a little bit of uniforms.
Well, you know, I was trying to, like, I keep notes between episodes to see, like, what's happened. And literally the only thing I have in my notes since we last recorded is new uniforms. And they made kind of made a big spectacle of this, right? Like, sure. there was the YouTube, like, video release, that lots of media around it. You know, Coyle the marketer probably helped with promoting this and enabling, you know, quite a bit of marketing around this. Internet impressions were, I think, mostly positive. Was that your impression at first?
Well, I mean, when you watch the uniform reveal, and if you want to remember what it looks like, pause the episode now and kind of Google Gopher Football 2018 uniform reveal. You'll see that the styles that they have are a multitude of different ones, but going from left to right in front of my computer screen right now, you have the all-white potential with the white helmet, the white top, the white pants. Now, again, I don't think that they're going to run them in these orders because I think they're going to mix and match all the different pants, especially with the anthracite. Folks, remember, I think this was a Halloween one a few years
ago. Yeah, against Michigan, I think, was the first time. The one where they almost beat Michigan, but Wolitarski was out of bounds.
Wolitarski's knee is down at the one. Then we had the Matt Limegrover four shifts running clock on the one. And then we couldn't sneak it in on fourth and goal, and Michigan ends up winning a game they should have no part of winning. But, yeah, so there's a gold helmet with this one, and then anthracite top, anthracite bottom, and then the final is on the right. It's that traditional maroon helmet with maroon top, maroon bottom. Now, you'll notice in the white and the maroon, you'll see there's a oar on it, obviously, row the boat on the back. There's a compass. Again, just kind of incorporating some of the row the boat themes that PJ Fleck has brought to Minnesota. Now, do I want to see an all anthracite uniform? Heck to the no. But it's something to where, if recruits like it, fine with me. Now, is that ever going to be a deciding factor for one of these recruits? Man, I hope not, because if they are, they're choosing a school for the wrong reason. But I think you'll see them mix and match some things here. Again, kids love the, you know, 17 to 21, which is the target age for these uniforms, because obviously Fleck wants to be able to show these to recruits saying, hey, we're changing things. You know, again, it's fine for me. Now, you is a few years older than I. What are your thoughts? So you can represent the 25 and older club.
You know, I don't hate them.
That's what you're going to lead with, is I don't hate them.
I don't hate them. I like them for the most part. I'm not over the moon. Uniforms aren't a huge thing for me, but I liked the Jerry Kill era uniforms. They were simple. This is going to sound so old, but you could read the numbers easily. Like, that mattered to me.
You can read them pretty easily on the back here.
Yeah, you can. But, like, I'm going to wait to make a judgment on that until I see them on TV. Right.
Wow.
Like, cause I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the white numerals on the maroon uniform with the gold outline around it. I'm curious to see if those will be easy to read. It's very possible they will be. I really like the white uniform overall. I like the shiny gold, the shiny gold helmet. I'm just not sure how it fits with anything, but that's fine.
I'm just curious. I mean, with all these different combinations that Minnesota has, I think they can have something over. Yeah, it says they can have over 100 possible uniform combinations next season. Like, I just want to know what the combinations are, because, again, you have three new jerseys, three new helmets,
right,
four pairs of pants. They have maroon, white, gold, and anthracite. They still do have gold pants, even though it's not displayed video.
Did they get rid of the gold jersey, too? Because I know they had a gold jersey.
I don't think they're going to use the gold jersey, but
okay.
I could be wrong about that.
Sure.
So we'll see. But, again, I think in the right context, it's tough to really say, well, this looks ugly, this looks good, until we see it come out Saturday morning before Minnesota plays. So, we'll see what the combinations are.
Yeah, I think the combinations do matter. But the other thing is, I'm just glad they didn't deviate to something really extreme. Right?
Yeah, like, there was some talk that maybe this goes way over row the boat.
Yeah.
And there's just oars and all kind of mantras everywhere. Again, I think there was a happy ground that was reached here. Now, I think it's going to get maybe a little bit more diverse next year. But, again, we can't really worry about that because we don't know what's going to happen next year. So, again, with these uniforms, I think good for fans, good for recruits. Something new.
The only my last comment. Do you think that the maroon in the maroon jerseys feels a little bit redder, or is that just a function of the photos? It's not that it bugs me all that much, and it very well could be just the way that they photographed it, but it feels a little redder, which is a little odd to me.
Well, I mean, you even look at the helmet, and then you look at in comparison to the top and the bottom, it does look a little bit more red. Now, again, maybe that is just the lighting. Maybe that is just the photo and video.
Right.
Again, I just want to see what the combinations look like. We can determine whether they're ugly or whether they look good, and then you can yell at the people around you in your section your thoughts. So, or you can scream into the abyss that is the Twitter machine. So I'll be there for those Saturday mornings for when they reveal. You can give me your thoughts there.
I do think you should have a poll during the first game. Do you like this uniform combination? Maybe it'll be every game, because for all we know, with 100-some combinations, it could take the better
part. I would imagine there's going to be... say Minnesota plays 13 games this year with 12 regular season and a bowl game, which I'm expecting. I imagine you're going to have 13 different combinations.
Yeah, I would imagine as well. All right, so with uniform talk out of the way, I don't know. Did we talk much about the new assistant coaches? I think we touched on this recently, but if you just want to give a quick overview, who the new guys are, where they're going to be in terms of what they're coaching or what they will be coaching, that might be a worthwhile quick overview.
Well, I was hoping by the time we recorded this, I would be able to get one-on-one interviews with them.
Oh, yeah.
Practice time. But unfortunately, that has been ex-nayed by the University of Minnesota so far. So that's pretty sweet. And considering I have 3 media availabilities left, and one of them is a spring game, I'm getting very angry. Because I'm trying to get the new coaches here to tell their story and where they came from. So for those who don't know, Minnesota does have a few new coaches, starting with tight ends coach Clay Patterson, someone that came from an Oklahoma junior college. He was the head coach. I'm going to butcher this. I'm going to have to pull it up. I believe it was Neo Community College.
Okay.
Yes, it was Neo. Northeastern Oklahoma A&M.
Okay.
He was the head coach there for 2 seasons. He's someone that had other Power 5 offers as a positional coach. And this spot opened up after Brian Callahan moved from tight ends coach to offensive line coach after Ed Warner, Minnesota's offensive line coach from last year, went to Michigan, and he's now the offensive line coach there. So that opened up this spot.
What a crazy story. Him going to Michigan, looking like taking effectively like a specialist, not even an assistant coach position, and then now becoming the offensive line coach. The irony is just too sweet that he's now at Michigan when he spent how much time at Ohio State and how much bashing he did of Michigan. It's too rich.
And to see the Michigan fan base just like warm up to Ed Warner, even though they know 2 years ago he was the OC at Ohio State, is always interesting.
Or vice versa, the Ohio State like guys that played for him, like ripping him and him using, statistics of, the number of guys he's put in the NFL, which were all Ohio State guys. Like, oh my, it's too good.
It's pretty funny. It is pretty funny. So what else you need to know about Clay Patterson is he's a young guy. Don't believe he's, I think he's like, so Luke, if he's born in 81, what is he like, 36?
Yeah, he's like, he's 37.
And what he's known for and why, again, Minnesota showed a lot of interest in him is he is an elite offensive mind. I mean, you look at some of the records he set in the NJCAA, which is the National Junior College Athletic Association. He set records for total offense with his teams, plays in a season, yards per game, points. Again, he's a very good offensive mind. He's someone that wanted to get into the Power 5 game, and PJ was able to get him there. So that's Minnesota's new tight ends coach. Then you kind of switch to the defensive side of the ball. You look at Marcus West, someone that is joining Minnesota from 2 years at Austin Peay. Again, Minnesota's going young here, a guy born in 83, so I believe that would make him 35. Someone that I know from talking with our guy Barton Simmons of 24/7 Sports, Austin Peay has really had a huge turnaround here in the last 3-4 years, and I know that their head coach was giving a lot of credit to Marcus West for that. Now, for those 2 years, he was, I believe, the pass rushing specialist along with the assistant head coach and co-defensive coordinator. So you look at what his role is going to be for Minnesota. it's just going to be working with the pass rushers, which is Carter Coughlin, Teyon Devers, and Carter. I mean, I have the video up on Gopher Illustrated, free for anybody to watch. He talks about Marcus West and how he has learned so much from Marcus West in terms of pass rush than he had his first 2 years in Minnesota. So, again, you have a young guy that's going to come in. He's going to take the state of Georgia for recruiting as well. For those of you that were worried about Mo Lindquist going to Texas A&M, who has Georgia now, that Georgia pipeline, that's going to be Marcus West. And as well, Clay Patterson is going to have the Texas area, and he's going to have the Oklahoma area. Next would be Joe Rossi. He was on staff last year as a defensive analysis. He is now the defensive line coach. Joe Rossi was at Rutgers from 2012 to 2015, so you have that Greg Schiano connection, which is how he's at Minnesota. And he was actually the defensive coordinator for, I believe, 13, 14, and 15 at Rutgers. So if you look at, if you know, potentially say Rob Smith were to go somewhere, my number one choice immediately in terms of where my hot board would be Joe Rossi. Makes too much sense. He was already a defensive coordinator. Fleck has a lot of respect for him. And so, again, Joe Rossi goes from that analysis role. Now he's the D-line coach with Bryce Pop, ultimately getting his contract not renewed. Rob Wenger adds outside linebacker responsibilities. He was already on staff as the special teams coordinator, someone that has the Kansas City area and some of Texas as well. And then finally, the new DB coach, Jameel Adai, someone that was the defensive backs coach at Arizona. He was at Arizona for the last 5 years. Again, he's another young guy. He's in his mid-30s, someone that played, I believe, at the University of West Virginia, had a cup of coffee in the NFL. He's done some stuff at Michigan, Cincinnati, and then he made his hay at Arizona. So Jameel is going to have some places in Florida along with some DBs. So, again, I think the common theme you look at with these new assistant coaches, basically outside of Rossi, who isn't very old himself, I believe he's 40s, sure, is that these guys are young. And even Rossi is still in his 30s. So you have four new assistant coaches in their 30s, and I think that that's by design. Again, you want to be able to match PJ's energy. I think there's much, you know, again, an Ed Warner, a Bryce Pop, two guys that have been around the block, and Bryce Pop about as even keel as they come. I think these guys, much more from what I've seen in practice, match PJ's intensity. And again, they're going to want to get after it on the recruiting trail to prove themselves as really unproven guys. You know, Marcus West from Austin Peay, Jameel Adai from Arizona, and Clay Patterson with his first time as a Power 5 assistant coach. So that's kind of what you can expect here from Minnesota's new assistant coaches.
All right. So just to close out, I don't think that, you know, some of the moves most people were a little bit shocked by. But, you know, you and I have talked offline. This is not all that uncommon, the number of moves that happen on the staff in the larger landscape of college football. You know, we were a part, or, you know, the last, what, 7 years with Jerry Kill and Tracy Clays, you know, there was almost no turnover. That is really the more uncommon thing. So, you know, seeing an assistant 2-3 leave to either get a promotion and or, you know, making a change that maybe isn't working, that's probably more common than what we saw with Jerry Kill and Clays. So this might be a trend, you know, year after year, don't you think?
Yeah, and I remember you posed the question to me, I think this was about a month and a half ago, was what was the staff turnover like with PJ at Western compared to what's happening now? And I think, and I believe the answer was he had an assistant coach or two leave every year, you know, for a better job or whatever it may be, where Jerry Kill's staff and Tracy Clay's staff was such an outlier because every staff basically throughout college football loses two or three and gains two or three a year. So you look at Minnesota staff this year, they gain Adai, West, and Clay Patterson. They transition in Rossi. Again, that is the absolute norm for college football, and it's the absolute norm for what PJ Fleck has going on. Again, it's not like these guys are taking jobs that maybe aren't better than Minnesota. Again, Ed Warner going to Michigan. You have Mo Lindquist going to Texas A&M, taking more money, having a better title. Again, it just makes sense for them. And again, the hope is that the recruiting doesn't fall off. The continuation of development continues for each one of these guys. But that is the absolute norm, as you said.
All right. Let's talk a little bit of spring ball. As you mentioned earlier, it snowed 3 inches today. So thank goodness for indoor practice facilities, I'd say.
By the way, if you haven't seen the new facility there, it is absolutely spectacular. It is everything I was hoping it was going to be. It's sensational. I mean, to look around and to be able to have the specialist work, for them to not worry about hitting the ceiling and asbestos falling down and hitting somebody on top of the helmet, knocking them out, getting a concussion. 100% true, by the way. I did see that in my 6 years covering over there. But it's something, I mean, there's so much natural light. It's awesome. So there's going to be a spring practice, I believe. I think the next one that's open is Tuesday at 4:45.
Okay.
So if you want to come on over, I would imagine it's going to be indoors considering what the weather has been like, as you mentioned, but it's awesome.
All right. So as spring practices go, you know, Clay's Kill, we're very open. I don't know. I think you could basically go to every practice, right, in previous years?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. And so now, like, this is a big shift where you're maybe going to get to see two full practices and three basically guys stretching. I would imagine that this is kind of going to be the norm going forward, wouldn't you expect?
Probably, unfortunately. Now, again, I'm not a huge proponent of it. I would like to see the whole thing again. It's spring ball. You want people to come out and cover your team. You want people to be able to talk about your team, and we can't talk about you if you don't let us be there.
Right.
You know, can I ultimately just ask my sources what's going on? Sure. But I also want to get my own opinions for myself to see, you know, kind of look through the maroon and gold colored glasses to see how much of what my sources is telling me is accurate, how much of it is a little bit off, and they're just trying to drum up interest in this guy so he performs better. You know, different things like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, as you mentioned, I've only been able to see one team portion of practice. I've been able to see guys stretch and do individual, I think, three times. Tuesday, it's open to everybody, which means I'll be able to see the team period again, and then one more stretch, and then the spring game. So,
all right.
Again, it is not as open as I'd like it to be. That's me 100% just being, I want to see like eight open practices where I get to see everything. I don't have to be there every day. I'm not asking for that. But I'd like to be able to kind of see guys develop throughout the spring in my eyes anyway.
Sure. All right. So there's the disclaimer on the next conversation. It's from a very small sample size, right? So let's chat a little bit of spring ball, maybe starting on the defensive side of the ball. You know, what are you seeing from defensive line? Obviously, you lose a guy like Richardson. You lose a Stelter, et cetera, you know, who's stepping up? Who do you expect maybe to fill a void? Are we going to have to wait for some freshman reinforcements? You know, what are some expectations along the defensive line?
You mentioned it. No more Steven Richardson, no more Merrick Jackson, no more Andrew Stelter. So you're looking at guys like Gary Moore potentially coming in. And the issue is some of the injuries that Minnesota has right now. Like Gary Moore hasn't partaken in any practice yet. He hasn't had a helmet, which he's there, he's fully dressed, doesn't have a helmet. That immediately screams to me he's got some kind of concussion issue somehow. I don't know what or how that would have happened. But again, if you don't have a helmet but you're fully dressed and you're running around, it doesn't scream like you have a lower body injury or he's got nothing in a sling. So I'm hoping that Gary Moore is able to get over this concussion. But again, if it is a concussion, it's been multi-week. And so that's very concerning for me because there is going to be some high expectations on Gary Moore and another guy, an Alabama defensive tackle transfer, O.J. Smith. He's ready to go. You know, I think he has to get in a little bit better shape. You've been able to see that if you were at the spring practice. Now, he's listed at 309 pounds. There ain't a chance in hell he's 309 pounds. I'll tell you that right now. Like, he is legitimately 340 at least. And again, if he is someone that's going to be expected to play 40, 50 snaps a game, he's got to get in a lot better shape. Now, he was battling the flu this spring, which, again, as anybody here knows, once you have that flu, you know, the first few practices or any kind of physical activity back, you feel like you're dragging along. But if he is going to be expected to be in that defensive tackle rotation, he's going to have to get into much better shape. And then you look at some of the guys behind him. You look at a guy like Nate Umlore, someone that played as a true freshman last year. He's put on some more weight, and he's kind of transitioning inside there to that three technique where he's listed at 269 pounds, which is nice, hashtag nice. But, again, he has to continue to put on that weight. He has to continue to kind of get get stronger again. That's everything that you'd expect from a guy that, again, in a perfect world, he redshirted last year, like an Ezi Owatumu, who is starting at Minnesota defensive end right now. So also, guys, on the D-tackle front, you have Royal Silver, the junior college transfer last year, who was able to redshirt from Iowa Western. He's in there, but I think ultimately you're looking at a defensive tackle rotation of potentially Gary Moore and O.J. Smith starting, and then you have your backups of Royal Silver, Nate Umlor. Maybe you move Nate Umlor to defensive end against those run teams so you have a bigger body out there. And then I think you also have – you can't count out guys like Elijah T. Again, someone that was extremely dominant throughout his high school career. Minnesota beat out a bunch of blue bloods for him and for a reason. He was had one of the most dominant camp performances I've seen from a defensive lineman. I think he is an absolute immediate contributor. He's very strong. He's very explosive. So I think if you have those four – and four or five at defensive tackle, I think you're looking pretty good. But the issue is, and this is going to be a constant theme throughout this podcast, and you're going, by the end of it, you're not going to like me because it's going to be all about reality and the truth. And the truth is, at defensive tackle, Minnesota is very inexperienced. Gary Moore, yes, he's played. O.J. Smith hasn't played in 2 years before his first snaps come against New Mexico State. Royal Silver has not played a Division I snap of football. Nate Umlor has played one season, and Elijah T. potentially has not played a Division I snap. So I think the talent is there, but it's inexperience. But then you transition out to defensive end and that run or that rush defensive end, that Carter Coughlin spot. Again, I think, you know, in a perfect world, Minnesota ultimately would have wanted to be able to move Carter Coughlin back to linebacker full time. Now, unfortunately, they haven't really been able to do that, but that's also personnel dictated. And what I mean by that is, and we'll, I mean, we'll get to linebackers, but that is a place where I feel very confident in Minnesota right now, especially for a team that plays as much nickel as Minnesota does and will in this upcoming season. That means only two linebackers on the field. Carter Coughlin was also Minnesota's best pass rusher throughout Big Ten play, whether you want to look at sacks, which, again, I don't think – yes, it's an indicator of the amount of pressure you're able to get, but the number of total pressures that Carter Coughlin had last year on the Gopher football team, according to Pro Football Focus, was number one on the team. Now, if he's actually taking what's happening with Marcus West, and from the one open practice I saw, Carter had two sacks in it, able to come off the edge there and be pretty dangerous with what he's learning how to do with his hands. Again, I think that's a good thing for Minnesota. Now, against those run-heavy teams, do I want a 235-pound Carter Coughlin in there on a first and second down? I don't know that I necessarily do. Maybe you transition Ezi Owatumu over to that side, bringing Nate Umlor on the other side, so you have 270, 260, and then you have two big guys on the inside. That makes a lot of sense to me. But, again, we'll see what Minnesota ends up doing there. So behind Carter Coughlin at that rush defensive end spot, you have redshirt freshman from Hopkins, Minnesota, Boye Mafe. Now, I still think he needs to put on a little bit more weight, but he's someone that, again, has high expectations here for the next year or two. And then Tayon Devers, yeah, a blast from the past there from that 2016 non-conference where he was decapitating folks. He is getting work there as well. And then I've mentioned his name about four times, Luke, and I haven't really gotten into it. It's Ezi Owatumu. He is on the all-name team. He is from Indianapolis, someone that redshirted last year, someone that PJ Fleck talked about constantly during the offseason as a redshirt to watch for the season. And he's all of it. I mean, he's listed at 6'6", 240. He's bigger than 240. I'll tell you that right now. He's probably 255 would be my guess. Again, someone that is going to be able to hold his own off the edge. And you're not going to have to – and again, this is not meant – no disrespect to Winston Delighty-Boudere, but he's 6'1", 240 pounds. Now you have a guy that's 6'6", with length and 255 pounds. Now Winston is still going to be counted upon in this defensive line rotation as – many professional football fans saw with the Minnesota Vikings, the way that the Philadelphia Eagles were able to rotate their defensive line guys and keep them fresh throughout the game was a huge determining factor in the playoffs and ultimately their Super Bowl victory. So you want to be able to go eight deep on the defensive line, and Winston going into his redshirt junior year is going to be counted upon to help out Ezi Owatumu. But he's someone that I have pretty high expectations for. So, again, I think you're going to have some inexperience there with Ezi likely starting alongside Carter Coughlin on that outside, but it's going to take some time for them to kind of adjust to Division I and Big Ten football.
All right, let's talk a little bit about linebackers. As you already alluded, this is a position where there is some experience, especially some playing experience. You got some guys that are entering, you know, their upperclassmen years. I got to imagine, like you said, this is probably one of the positions on the field that, you know, as a staff and, you know, as Gopher fans, we're probably going to be most confident.
I absolutely am. I mean, that's without doubt right now, because Thomas Barber and Blake Cashman are both not practicing in terms of contact this spring. Both of them had some off-season surgeries to take care of some nagging things that they played through in that Big Ten schedule. But you look at Minnesota and what they want to do. You say they're too deep if you're a nickel. You're going to be starting Thomas Barber, who one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten last year. I know that some people have some qualms about him getting off blocks. I mean, you're going to have that anytime you got a six foot one linebacker, but the way he's able to penetrate and then stick with his man and get that tackle in space is pretty impressive, especially for a sophomore last year. Leads Minnesota in tackles, leads them in tackles for loss, run stuff, force fumbles. I mean, Thomas Barber was everywhere doing things last year. So you're going to have him starting with Kamal Martin on the outside, so you have an all-Minnesota linebacking core there. Kamal Martin took his lumps at times last year, but again, there is no denying that the athletic ability that Kamal Martin has is highly up there. Now, if that light continues to come on, I mean, his ceiling is immense, and that's without a doubt. So you have those two starting, and then it's one of the reasons why Carter Coughlin remains at rush defensive end and why they don't kind of move him back to linebackers, Blake Cashman. Minnesota's well aware that they have to get Blake Cashman more involved. You saw his, you know, 2016 run of games there to end the season, ultimately ending in a bowl game MVP, and then they couldn't really find a lot of time for him on the field last year. That's going to change this fall. That is the plan from what I've been told from my sources, is we need to work in more Blake Cashman, so Carter's going to have to work more at rush defensive end. So you have those three. You also have guys like Thomas Rush, an early enrollee from this 2018 class, who he looks good. He is 6'3". He runs well, and he's long. I know Thomas Barber told the media after one of the availabilities that if it was up to him, he's playing day one. He's like, this kid is constantly calling me, constantly texting me about different things. He's like, he's a quick learner, and you've seen what he's able to do when he's out there. Now, I don't have quite that high of expectations for Thomas Rush in year one. Now, I know he's an extremely impressive-looking athlete, but again, I think he needs to continue to adjust to playing linebackers. He was a two-way player out in Marysville, Ohio. But, I mean, so you have those four, plus Julian Huff, who, by the way, is starting right now for Minnesota, Juju Huff, because there's no Cashman, there's no Barber, so you have a starting unit of Juju and Kamal Martin. So if you look at your, you know, two deeps of Kamal, Barber, then you have Cashman and Juju, I think you're pretty set there. Plus you have incoming freshmen like Thomas Rush, Braylon Oliver, and then Mariano Sori-Marin. So again, I think depth at linebacker is an issue. Potentially, say a Thomas Barber and Kamal were to go down, Cashman isn't quite, you know, the Mike linebacker. That's where maybe a guy like Mariano Sori-Marin is able to come in and potentially contribute on special teams along with Braylon Oliver as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how linebacker plays out this fall.
All right, let's talk secondary. That was by far the spookiest position last year. We knew that going in. You know, they were decimated for a number of reasons. And I have to imagine, again, it's still a concern. But you have guys like Coney Durr that are getting healthy. And you got a couple of redshirt freshmen that I imagine they're going to be relied upon heavily this season. But what are you seeing right now in early spring practice?
I wish some guys were out there performing. And what I mean by that is Florida transfer Chris Williamson hasn't been able to partake. I believe he's battling a lower body injury that he just sustained prior to spring practice opening up. Maybe we're able to see him on Tuesday. But, again, I think he's Minnesota's best corner on the roster from what I've been told. And I haven't been able to see him work live. You know, he is a legitimate 6 foot. He was very highly sought after for a reason. I'd like to see him out in the field. And Antoine Winfield Jr. is also not partaking in team. Again, from what I've been told, that's more about making sure Antoine Winfield Jr. is healthy. Minnesota and all their fans know what happened to the secondary when Winfield went down, I believe, against Middle Tennessee State. So they need a healthy Winfield, especially for what the rest of the secondary is going to be able to look like. There's no more Kadarian Handy Holly. He unfortunately decided to transfer. And so Minnesota's kind of left at safety with some unproven bodies there as well. But you're looking at like a starting secondary of, in an ideal world, probably Chris Williamson and Keandre Thomas at corner. You have Antoine Winfield and I would say Jacob Huff, obviously, at safety. And then I would be interested to see what would happen in the slot. Is it Antonio Chenault? Is it Justice Harris? Do you slide Antoine Winfield Jr. down there and you bring on a guy like Adam Beckett, safety, or Calvin Swenson? Calvin Swenson, a walk-on from Wisconsin, is starting at safety for Minnesota right now with no Antoine Winfield participating as well. So I think there's going to be some bodies there. You know, some red shirts like Adam Beck and Ray Estes are now eligible to help out a guy like Justice Harris as well. So I am going to be curious to see what happens, because you also have guys like Terrell Smith, someone bigger, longer, and faster than Jalen Myrick coming in this summer. You also have Benny Sapp Jr., someone that's 100% healthy now. He's power cleaning. He's squatting. I mean, he's healthy. Now you have to keep him that way. And so that's why they're going to transition him back to safety instead of putting him at corner to hopefully lessen the wear and tear there. So, I mean, this is a secondary where if Keandre Thomas is healthy, which he is this spring, he is Minnesota's best corner right now. Now, if Chris Williamson comes out and actually shows that he's better than Keandre, that's a good thing for Minnesota. But you also know that a guy like Jacob Huff is a ball hawk. You have Antoine Winfield with his versatility to play safety, slot corner, kind of match up with wherever the defense is giving him. But it's depth behind them, because the two deep for Minnesota in spring ball and the two DBs is transfers and walk-ons. And I don't want to get to that point, because I'm tired of watching a Minnesota secondary like you saw last year, not be able to perform to what they should be, especially with the years of Jay Sabo. Now, Coney Durr appears to be playing a lot more confident than he did early on in spring ball, and that's good. He's healthy. Again, maybe he's a guy that can come back and give Minnesota something. So there's just a lot of unproven things there.
Yeah.
How does Chris Williamson respond? Keandre Thomas battled injuries last year. Antoine Winfield battled injuries last year. And then you also have an incoming freshman group. So I'd say, you know, if I had to rank my confidence in what the defense in terms of position units are, I'd go linebackers. I'd go corner. I'd go defensive end. I'd go safety. And I just really want to see what happens with the defensive tackles as well. So it's just a lot of inexperience at some certain positions, and Minnesota's going to have to get these guys some snaps in September.
Oh, okay. So defensively, I mean, there are a lot of pieces to replace. There's a lot of unproven talent. I think that's also going to be true largely on the offensive side too. You look at, you know, a guy like Shannon Brooks is going to be out for the year. We'll talk about that, but let's maybe start with offensive line. If we recall last spring, I think what they had maybe six or seven.
They started with like six,
right? And then they got down to four.
All I remember from last spring practice was Minnesota couldn't run 11-on-11 because they had four offensive linemen.
Right.
Everybody else was out with injuries or surgeries. It was silly. I mean, now you have a group of, I think, 12. So you're able to go, you can have two groups, you can get them through quickly. But with offensive line, I mean, this is probably the group I feel most confident about. And I don't know if I've ever said that about a Minnesota offensive unit. And me feeling, I feel pretty good about offensive line. So
yeah.
I don't really know how I feel about saying that. It feels kind of dirty coming out of my mouth. But you look at the offensive line right now. You have Donnell Green, who at left tackle is Minnesota's best hope to get drafted. Now, he had a late round grade this year, but if he continues to play, if he has a 2018 season like he did the first six games of 2017, Donnell Green is going to go somewhere between late second round and fourth round. And again, for a Minnesota offensive line unit that hasn't had an offensive lineman drafted in 12 years, it's about damn time, because I can guarantee you it's being used on the recruiting trail with guys such as Quinn Carroll. You know, this Quinn Carroll battle, it's basically Minnesota and Notre Dame for my money right now.
Okay.
So what does Notre Dame have going for them? Oh, I don't know. Quentin Nelson, who's going to be the top offensive lineman drafted. And then they also have the top OT that's going to be drafted as well. They can sell that, and then Notre Dame can look at Minnesota and be like, hey, Quinn, like, you know that Minnesota hasn't had an offensive lineman drafted in 12 years, right? And we're going to have the top OT and the op and the top guard drafted. Like, what are you doing? So,
sure.
I mean, if you're thinking it's not used on the recruiting trail, you are just being naive. So that's where I hope, like, Donnell Green can come in and end that streak next year. At left guard, you have Connor Olson, someone who I think is Minnesota's most improved offensive lineman from last year. It's going to be a redshirt sophomore from Monticello, Minnesota. Again, you have athleticism there. He just needs to continue to get stronger. At center, you're going to have Jared Weiler, someone that battled injury again last year. You know, the hope is he's able to stay healthy for 9-10 games this year and let Minnesota see what he can do as a senior at center. And then at right guard is where it gets really interesting for me. Now, Bronson Dovich from Chaska, a redshirt junior, is there. But if Blaze Andrews is healthy, which currently he is not, unfortunately, you know, the hope is that he gets healthy by the end of spring ball and then he can show that going into the summer. Because Blaze Andrews, I would love to see him at right guard because he was competing with Bronson Dovich there. And again, what Blaze can do athletically at 6'5", 6'6", is special. I mean, that's why he was the top-rated recruit in the state of Minnesota for that 2017 class. It's why he had offers from everywhere. But he needs to stay and remain healthy. And so your hope is that he gets healthy and he's your right guard, I think. And then at right tackle, it'll be interesting to see what happens because junior college offensive tackle Jason Dixon will get on campus this summer and compete with Sam Schluter at that spot. So, I mean, you always want competition at every position, but that right side of the offensive line is going to look interesting. And then I know people are very curious about two Florida boys. Well, I guess one Australian there too with Daniel Fa'alele. He is enormous. Yeah, I mean, he is all he's all 6'8", 400 pounds. He is Minnesota's second string right tackle right now. And right beside him is Curtis Dunlap Jr., the highest rated offensive lineman to ever sign with the University of Minnesota. What I can tell you is, when they are in the two unit, which they are the starting right guard and right tackle right now, if they run to that side, there is usually always a positive gain. Now, both of those guys need to get in better shape because they are pretty winded at times. And I know that Brian Callahan isn't too thrilled about that. But again, that's why you have your early enrollees get on campus. You know, say you want each to drop 20, 30 pounds. Well, you get them through spring ball. You get them with the University of Minnesota nutrition staff. And you say, okay, this is what we're going to do meal plan-wise. This is what we're going to do exercise-wise. And if you hold to it, I can guarantee you're going to see results. And so hopefully you're able to get them down 20 pounds for fall camp, where if you need emergency depth, which I don't think Minnesota needs Curtis or Daniel this fall, along with some of the incoming freshmen, I think you're going to be set just fine there. So, again, I feel pretty good about this offensive line unit right now.
Yeah, that's a nice change. You know, last spring when we were talking, we were just wondering how they were going to field five guys, right? A bunch of guys needed to get healthy, and it's just nice to have, well, like you said, 12 bodies and a chance for people to, you know, to play like a full, like they'll actually have a full spring scrimmage, right? So a lot of guys are going to get reps, and that'll be fantastic. And it's not too many reps too, right? Like last year, those guys were getting like 70 plus reps.
They were
in
getting
that spring
a ton.
Game. It was almost
all
too many.
All these big guys are able to kind of pace themselves to an extent. So again, you want those incoming freshmen of Fa'alele and Dunlap to get in a little bit better shape. You want Blaze Andrews to be healthy. And if all those things happen this fall, again, it's crazy for me to say. Because how many of these episodes have we talked about offensive line play being below average?
Yeah.
I think Minnesota has a chance to be average, above average potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been quite some time since that's been able to happen, and I hope that Minnesota is able to stay healthy.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about tight end. This might be the first year that they don't feature a guy that's over 6'10" at tight end. which will be disappointing, because who's gonna be screaming on the message boards and the Twitterverse, why don't we throw it to our 6'10" guy in the corner of the end zone? So what are we seeing here at tight end?
Oh, Nate Wozniak, the top rated Pro Football Focus run blocking tight end. And I believe they only threw it to him like twice in the end zone, and both times Wozniak screwed it up. And I think you see why Minnesota didn't ultimately throw to him. But tight end is going to be inexperienced. Now, it's going to be, again, you're going to be angry with me, that being the listener. Tight end is going to be significantly inexperienced because you don't have any Brandon Lingan. You don't have any Nate Wozniak. And so you're looking at Minnesota's elder statesman in terms of snaps being Ko Keefe with like 30 snaps. You know, Colton Beebe has played, and I guess Colton would probably be the elder statesman there, but he's been battling a knee issue. And again, he has been, you know, battling that throughout the entire spring. Ko has been battling a shoulder injury as well. And then you have a redshirt freshman by Jake Paulson, who, again, has high expectations coming in. I think he's Minnesota's best pass-catching threat. But when I look at this tight end group for Clay Patterson, I think this group needs to get much more athletic. And, again, for what the tight end is evolving to in the NFL. I mean, you look at arguably the tight end one for this draft class coming up is a kid from South Dakota State by the name of Jake Goddard. Again, a kid from South Dakota State, but you look at his, you know, workout numbers and you see what he was able to do when you turn on the tape. Again, this is an extremely athletic guy. Now, can Jake Paulson get there one day? I'd hope he could be tight end one in a perfect world, and if he reaches the ceiling 100%. But again, it's just unfair to guys like Colton Beebe, because when he was healthy, when I saw him early in his career, when I saw him earn his offer from Jerry Kill at camp, I mean, this was going to be a hybrid fullback tight end that was going to be a mismatch. And unfortunately, a knee injury has kind of derailed what was going to, what was looking like a very promising career. You know, Ko Keefe, I think, is Minnesota's best run blocking tight end. He's probably going to be your every down guy if and when healthy. So, again, I think he's going to be your good run blocker, but they need a pass catching threat for these quarterbacks, because my biggest takeaway, I think, from this offense is they need someone to help out the quarterback not named Tyler Johnson. Because if Victor Viramontes or Tanner Morgan has time, who are they going to throw the ball to that gets open? Because that was a huge issue throughout Big Ten play, was the quarterback would have time, but then the receiver, A, couldn't get separation, and B, when he did, he stonewalled it. You know, stone hands, just goes through. And again, if it's third and five and you throw a slant for six and he has it, hits him in the hands and it drops it, okay, well, now we're punting what should have been a first down. So I think that's why I think a guy like Brevin Spann IV, the top recruit from the 2018 class in the in-state, from St. Cloud Tech, he just has a skill set that's so much different than the other tight ends on the roster. I mean, he's bigger and he's more athletic than every tight end Minnesota has there. He's not going to be as good of a run blocker as Ko Keefe or Colton Beebe, I can assure you of that. But again, you can flex him out wide, and he's going to be a mismatch for a linebacker, and he's going to be too big for a safety. So if you want to be able to use him there, that's where I think that would be beneficial. That's why I think Brevin Spann IV has to come in and play right away, because Minnesota needs a pass-catching threat not named Jake Paulson. So at tight end, I think Beebe and Ko Keefe are going to be your run blockers, your more every-down guys, Jake Paulson and Brevin Spann IV mix in on that third-down situations or passing downs. But again, I think this is a unit that needs to get an upgraded athleticism.
So wide receiver, we've talked about this before. You alluded to it earlier. You have a known quantity in Tyler Johnson, arguably the best returning wide receiver they've had in some time, actually. But really after that, it's all question marks. There's a lot of unproven. A lot of unproven commodities, right? There's a lot of expectation for some guys, but they just need playmakers. It's as simple as that, right?
I mean, I've talked with sources on this staff, and that is probably, again, a huge selling point or a huge point that they're getting across to me and me to them, is this team needs playmakers, not named Tyler Johnson and Rodney Smith. Because you mentioned it, there's no more Shannon Brooks, and we'll get to that in a bit. No more Colvin McCrary. And then you look at wide receiver, which was essentially a dumpster fire outside of Tyler Johnson last year. I mean, I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it, because it was awful. I mean, Tyler led the team in everything. I mean, catches, yards, touchdowns, yards a catch, success rate, catch rate, target rate. I mean, Tyler Johnson was targeted on 33% of his routes. Like, he had a target share of 33%. The next guy had a target share of 10%. That's for a reason. So you look at what Minnesota has outside of Tyler Johnson this spring, and good for them that they have a Chris Ottman Bell right now. Chris Ottman Bell, if you remember last year and during fall camp, if you go back and listen to those episodes, I thought Chris Ottman Bell was better than Demetrius Douglas. Now, unfortunately, Chris had a foot injury that kind of derailed what was going to look like a promising true freshman season, so we had to redshirt. But he's healthy now, and he's making plays. He's Minnesota's best contested catch winner. And for anyone that's listened to any of these breakdown podcasts, I think Derek Burns is rolling over in whatever Canadian province he's in or wherever in the world he is right now, because that's one of the biggest things that we stress on is Minnesota hasn't had a guy that can go up and win a contested catch or a 50-50 ball even 30% of the time. Well, Chris Ottman Bell has been doing that all spring. P.J. Fleck has been talking him up all spring, and I am now buying 100% stock in the Chris Ottman Bell. He needs to stay healthy, because that was an issue. He didn't play a majority of his senior season. Now, he had a foot injury in fall camp, two totally separate injuries from senior year to freshman year of college. But if he's healthy, he's definitely someone that is an upgrade outside of what Minnesota threw out there last year. Demetrius Douglas is now healthy as well. Again, I think you're going to see him kind of work in that slot role with Chris Ottman-Bell on the outside. And then I also think you're going to need Rashad Bateman. Again, there's a reason why Rashad Bateman exploded as a senior. There's a reason why P.J. Fleck continues to talk him up. Now, am I hoping to see something from someone like Philip Howard? Absolutely. Someone like Mark Williams or Harry Van Dyne? I mean, I hope so, but I'm not holding my breath. Yeah, you know, Philip Howard is nursing something this spring, and we're going to have to see how that kind of goes. But I think that if you can get contributions from Chris Ottman-Bell along with Rashad Bateman and then something from Demetrius Douglas as well, that is an absolute upgrade for what the quarterback has weapon-wise. But, again, that is going to be a gigantic emphasis for Minnesota in this 2019 class is we need playmakers because mm-hmm. we don't have a whole lot right now, and it is what it is for what the old staff left. Again, you look at the transfer situation Minnesota had at wide receiver. Rashad still transfers out. Drew Himoleski decides to focus on baseball. And I believe Hunter Register transferred as well. Again, not exactly – you know, what Minnesota was hoping for from those three guys in terms of being immediate impact guys, but they need some playmakers at that wide receiver position. Hopefully Bateman gives them that, and hopefully Ottman-Bell and Douglas stay healthy.
All right, so running back, obviously you have what I would say is your best player overall in Rodney Smith. He will be in a redshirt senior year. The expectations for him are going to be super high without a Shannon Brooks and really kind of no proven backup at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Kobe McCreary got 120 Smith last year, 229 rushes. Kobe McCreary and Shannon Brooks combined for somewhere around 175. So you're trying to replace 175 rushing attempts from whoever it's going to be is unproven. By the way, have we talked about how I'm going to say that a lot on this podcast and you're going to be triggered at me?
Yeah.
You're going to be hashtag mad online at me? Because, again,
yeah.
Let's go back. Tight end, you're going to be breaking in Cole Keefe, Colton Beebe, Jake Paulson, and Brevin Spanford, who have a combined snap total in Division I contests of 100 snaps between them. And Paulson and Spanford haven't played. And then you look at wide receiver, Chris Ottman-Bell has never played a Division I snap. Demetrius Douglas has played in 3 games. Rashad Bateman has not played in Division I contest. And then you are going to be replacing 40% of your carries with guys that haven't played a Division I snap. Now, the leading guy to kind of assume that number two role right now is probably Mohamed Ibrahim, someone from the East Coast that P.J. Fleck picked up on that Friday night where he got something silly like 8 commitments on a Friday night, which is one of the craziest things I've seen in my years of covering recruiting. Someone that is 5'9", probably 205, again, a north-south runner that runs very confident. And, again, I say that because every time he takes a carry, he is very confident. He's very decisive, and he wants to get north and south. Doesn't have breakaway speed, but he knows how to kind of slip into those crevasses in between the offensive linemen and try to get as many yards as he can and keep his legs going. Now, what I ultimately think ends up happening is one of the true freshmen contribute. Minnesota signed 2 of the top 25 running backs in the country, according to 24/7 Sports, and Sarasota's Bryce Williams and Georgia's Nolan Edmonds. So I think what ends up happening is you have a 3-man battle in camp with Mohamed Ibrahim, Bryce Williams, and Nolan Edmonds for those 2 and 3 spots because you saw how valuable it was to kind of alleviate the pressure off of Rodney Smith. Because, again, Rodney can take 20 carries a game. Now, do I want him taking 30 carries a game, especially as the Big Ten schedule and we get into late October, early November?
Oh.
Absolutely not. So, again, I think you're gonna see a guy like Bryce Williams play right away. You're going to have to see Mohamed Ibrahim take some carries. I'm not expecting a whole lot from a guy like Jonathan Femi-Cole. I mean, that's why you don't hear me talk about him, obviously. So,
yeah, but he was great in Michigan. Oh, sorry.
He also, I think he was the spring game MVP last
year. Yeah, right.
Which, by the way, that is a thing you don't want to be. Because I think 3 years ago, it was, oh, my gosh. All right, Luke, we're going to get through this. People are going to be facepalming.
The North
Rachel
Dakota.
Rachel Banham's brother.
Yep, Cole Banham.
Cole Banham was the spring game MVP 3 years ago.
Yep.
2 years ago was James Johannesson.
Yep,
the North Dakota guy. Now RB3 at North Dakota. Last year it was Jonathan Femi-Cole. So whoever is the MVP coming up here on Saturday, you don't want that because bad things happen to you. Things don't go your way.
Oh, man, you just jinxed it. Like, We got to have an MVP that actually that's trending up instead of trending down.
Man, I hope so. But again, I'm not holding my breath exactly. So again, you're going to have 40% carries from someone who hasn't taken a Division I snap. Roddy Smith looks sensational. Again, you know that from Roddy Smith. That's why he is eyeing Darrell Thompson's, I believe, total yards record or rushing yards record this year. He's been sensational. You just want somebody to be able to help him get into space more often, because when Roddy Smith is in space, good things happen.
Right.
So my bet would be Muhammad Ibrahim right now, and then probably a guy like Bryce Williams as well as a true freshman coming in right away.
Can we just agree that right now Roddy Smith is still probably the best slot receiver on the roster as well?
Stop. I know that we talked about that. And I talked about that with a few people close to the Minnesota staff. And they're like, do you have any idea how hard it would be for Roddy to try and run like anything outside of a slant from the slot?
Yeah.
It's like, how about we don't need him to run anything outside of a slant from the slot, because he can get open.
I know. I'm sorry.
Anyways.
I'm just poking your buttons. Okay. Let's not sugarcoat it, Ryan. This is the position that everybody, wants to talk about. And quite frankly, the facts are the facts. They don't have a quarterback that has thrown a Division I pass, on roster currently.
No, they don't. And, I was pretty, speaking of making me triggered and pushing my buttons, I think I tweeted that out, like, hey, Minnesota doesn't have a quarterback on the roster that's thrown a Division I, like, pass in a college contest. Then, of course, I get the snarky guy, well, didn't Victor Viramontes, doesn't he count as a JUCO? Like,
no.
Really? Or, like, guys, I mean, no. He counts, but he doesn't count. Like California Junior College compared to even, I mean, guys.
Okay, you got to get better at framing your tweets. Nobody has thrown a Power 5. Apparently.
It's just a Division I contest.
It's like, not, yeah. Okay.
Whatever.
It is what it is. The point, go with the letter of the law, whatever. Who cares? It's inexperience.
So it is inexperience, because Tanner Morgan, it's essentially a battle between Tanner Morgan and Victor Viramontes, with Tanner Morgan being the guy who's winning right now, which is 100% to be expected of me. I mean, let's go back through the history of junior college guys at the University of Minnesota in recent years. You look at guys like Damian Wilson, now the starting linebacker for the last couple of seasons for the Dallas Cowboys. He did not start, and he was an early enrollee. He didn't even start a linebacker until like a week before fall camp, because, again, it takes a little bit of time for these guys to come in and learn the system from guys who have been in the system for a year or two, like a Tanner Morgan. So Victor, again, I think Minnesota is ultimately going to end up playing both of them this year, because if you go back and you look at the stats, Minnesota's played two quarterbacks because of injury or play every year, I think, except for one in the last 6 or 7 years.
Basically since Adam Weber, that I can think of.
So, again, for those who's going to win the quarterback battle, does it matter? Like,
no,
both of them
matter.
Are likely going to have to play. And this kind of just goes back to what the whole offense is kind of shaping up to be. Now, I just ran the stats here before the show, and Minnesota in 2017 ran the ball 68% of the time. And I can assure you from talking with some people close to the offensive staff, they don't want to run the ball 68% of the time. They want to pass it 50%. They want to run it 50%. The issue is they don't have the playmakers on the outside to pass the ball. I mean, you saw Minnesota throw the ball 9 times in a game last year. Minnesota doesn't want to do that. Kirk Cherok and PJ Fleck don't want to do that. But if you don't have any playmakers on the outside, say at positions like tight end or wide receiver that can get open, not named Tyler Johnson, there's not a whole lot else for Minnesota to do.
Yeah.
So that's why you're hoping guys like Bateman and Span Ford come in with the immediate contributors. You hope that Chris Hopman Bell, Demetrius Douglas, and Philip Howard can give you something as well. Because if you can, now I'm not anticipating Minnesota getting back to a 50-50 from 68-32, but maybe it's 55-45. Heck, even 60-40 I'd take. But again, for Minnesota to pass the ball more, they need more consistent play from their quarterbacks, which Demaryius Crofts grading out as the second worst quarterback in all of college football last year doesn't help. Connor Rhoda maybe indecisive and not a running threat in an RPO offense doesn't help. And I think Tanner and Victor have skill sets that make a lot more sense for what Kirk Cherok is offering. Now, Victor Viramontes and Tanner Morgan, I think the offense changes a little bit depending who's in. Because Victor, what he can do with his legs is literally Chris Streveler-esque. Now, for those of you that I've talked about at endless length who think Chris Streveler wasn't a good football player, You should definitely go watch that South Dakota tape where he went and was a Heisman finalist in the FCS.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that multiple Missouri Valley defensive coordinators have told me he was the one guy that they had the game plan for every game, and he was the toughest to game plan for because, as Chris ran yesterday, I think Chris Strebler at his USD Pro Day ran a 4.36.
Whoa. Which,
yeah. And the other time I saw it was 4.44.
Well, who cares? Anything sub 4.5 for a quarterback is real impressive.
Again, I'm not saying – I don't think Victor is nearly as fast as what Chris was. But Victor, when he gets into trouble, you know, or you know, say his first or second options aren't there, he's going to try to run you over. And he's going to try to use his legs. And that's where he's found success throughout his junior college career, his high school career, is with his legs when he gets into trouble. Whereas Tanner, if he gets on the outside and he's rolling, he's got his eyes downfield, he's going to try to find the open receiver. Now, both of them are about the same height, which I think some folks are surprised about, which I'm not necessarily sure why. I think both are about 6 foot, 6'1", which doesn't bother me at all compared to, you know, maybe a Zach Anixed who's 6'3". But again, I think Tanner has been more impressive this spring. He is someone that PJ has continually talked about at every single media availability and for good reason. You know, he's made the strong, accurate throws. Again, he has been more decisive. You know, can he run? Tanner, yes, he can run. But obviously he can't take as many hits as a guy like Victor Viramontes. Now, for those of you in the where my quarterback to be me consider great, he has to throw a spiral. You're probably not going to like Victor Viramontes as much because his ball does wobble from time to time, which I don't care about at all because if it's on target
right,
and it hits the receiver in the hands, that's his job, like catch the ball. So I think it's ultimately going to be a two-team or a two-guy race there. I think Zach Anixted, the preferred walk-on from IMG Academy, turned down scholarship offers from the University of Pittsburgh and the University of Illinois to walk on at Minnesota, which if you were to have used that and told me, like Zach Yannick said, turned on two Power 5 offers to walk on, I think that's as many Power 5 offers as what Minnesota had for quarterback commitments combined in the 5 years Jerry Kill was here. Hmm. Like, no one else wanted Jerry Kill's quarterback. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, I did not mention Seth Green. I don't think he's a quarterback. I just don't. He's, you know, he's quarterback 3 right now. I don't think Minnesota thinks he's a quarterback because when I was there last on Tuesday, he was working with the punt gunners. Now, you tell me why you're throwing a potential quarterback and working him out on special teams units. I think if you move Seth Green to tight end, he is going to get snaps because, again, he has a skill set that's 6'4" and athletic that Minnesota doesn't have as a pass catcher really there. So
is that where Oregon ultimately wanted to move him was tight end?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they had him committed as a quarterback.
Right.
Saw a senior tape and said, hey, we'll still take you, but we want to take you as a tight end.
Yeah.
So, again, ultimately, I think that's what happens. And I'm not sure if it happens for the rest of spring ball here, if it happens over the summer. But if Seth Green wants to contribute to this team, I think the quickest way to do that is moving to tight end.
Well, ultimately, so, the question is going to be about, you know, how they're going to stack up, you know, the position, because like you said, two guys have played every year. You got to have a third. So either you're going to be willing to burn Anixted's red shirt, right? Or
I think he's your emergency QB 3, and I think he's okay. Looked good enough this yeah. spring to where that's why you go to Seth and be like, hey, dude,
yeah.
if you want to contribute, we need you, you know, tight end
because
the
that's
wide
the
receiver.
That's
because
the only
we need
reason
playmakers there.
Yeah, that's the only reason to keep him at quarterback, right? Would be if he needs to play for some reason, you want a redshirt Anixted.
Emergency QB 3.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
right.
And especially with what's coming in next year and Cole Kramer and potentially Max Duggett, it's not going to get any easier for a guy like Seth Green. So I think he ultimately switches positions. So you know, Lucas, we kind of wind things down here. I think we've probably been talking too long already for some folks, but my biggest impressions on offense is they need more playmakers.
Mm-hmm.
They need Chris Hotman-Bell to be the real deal. They need Demetrius Douglas and Phillip Howard to be healthy. And they need Rashad Bateman and Brevin Spanford to help out their quarterbacks. They need Bryce Williams or Nolan Edmonds to be the real deal at running back. I mean, we've talked about the inexperience at quarterback, not a guy who's thrown a Division I pass. You're going to be replacing 40% of your carries from last year with a guy who hasn't taken a carry. You're going to be breaking in potentially 3 new guys that don't have a lot of experience at wide receiver. At tight end, Kokeef and Colton Beebe have played maybe 100 snaps. You're going to see that exponentially increase this year. Jake Paulson's never played a snap. Brevin Spanford's never taken a snap. So you have a lot of inexperience on the offensive side of the ball. Then on defense, defensive tackle, you're inexperienced. At defensive end with Ezio Witumu, never taken a snap. Linebacker, I feel very good about. Defensive back-wise, Chris Williamson hasn't played in 2 years, and you need the rest of that secondary to stay healthy. So, again, I think this is a team that should be heading to a bowl game. I don't think it's a 5-7 win team. I think they have enough talent to obviously get to a bowl game, and we'll see. For me, it's still so tough, Luke, because I mentioned all the inexperience. I think September is going to be rough in terms of – I think Minnesota wins games, but it's not going to be by as much as what people want.
It's not going to be pretty.
Because – I mean, these kids are going to have to take their lumps.
Right.
A lot of them haven't played. Again, they're going to be wide-eyed. They're going to be thinking, and they're going to have jitters. I don't want my guys thinking on a football field. I want my guys just going out and playing and not being able to think about, okay, so it's this, where am I going? And, again, if you're thinking, it's not good. You just want to read and react. You want to know, be confident in yourself, and I think it's going to take a little bit of time. So, again, I think this is a bowl-eligible winning team. I'm not expecting the big challenge of Wisconsin this year. But I think as they continue to get more playmakers in on the offensive side of the ball, I think it's going to get really interesting for Minnesota here really quick.
And recruiting's still on the uptick, right? Like, you're still optimistic about the state of recruiting.
I mean, Minnesota just signed their best recruiting class in the internet era. They have the top quarterback in the Midwest on campus this weekend. I think there's a lot to be excited about.
You're still selling hope there.
I'm not selling hope. There's just proven hope.
Yes. Yeah.
Hopefully. Again, I think Minnesota has like the 30th to 32nd ranked recruiting class right now, which really doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot.
Right.
But again, you get a guy like Max Duggan in. We've talked about extensively on Gopher Illustrated. If Max Duggan gets in the boat, watch out, because there could be a domino effect. And if you want to know what that means, by the way, I'll plug this again. I think we're going to have a sale here coming up in the next week or two. Recruiting is going to be very interesting here as the month of April goes on. Minnesota's got some big-time visitors coming in the next few weekends. So once that deal comes out on the Twitter machine, I don't know what you're waiting for. You've listened to this podcast for years. You know what we're talking about. You want to come join a very uplifting community on Gopher Illustrated and get your rudeness out of the way. Join GI.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for listening. You've put in quite a bit of time to listen, and we appreciate it. If you like the podcast, please rate it on iTunes and any other aggregator that you're using. We appreciate that. That's how other people are able to find it. So we appreciate you listening, and go Gophers.